Thank you. I'm here to talk to you today about the integration services packages, how you can get your packages into SQL Server 2012, take advantage of the great new features that are there. Before we got started, I already asked by a quick show of hands who's currently using 2008. Who is? Yeah, lots of people. Very good. 2005? A few people still. 2000? One person? Two? Three? Okay. So if you're excited about the new features in SQL Server 2012 and you have decided to upgrade, or someone has decided in your, on your behalf that you should be upgrading, then you've come to the right session, because we are going to talk about what you do, the steps to take. I'm going to take a very demo-driven approach. Before we get into the demos, I do have a few slides with some of the highlights. Benefits of upgrading, to me, comes first. On the developer side, of course, we have significant designer enhancements. If you've heard about them, Undo is my absolute favorite. We now have Undo in the SSIS designer. I also like the ability to group tasks together and just have them collapse and a little bit out of the way. If you have these complex data flows, we can now make that look a little bit less complex and focus on what's important to us. I like that too. There are changes to the XML package format. Now, I don't presume that many of you actually go and edit that XML package format by hand, but the changes are directly... One person has? Okay, good. Wow. Brave, brave people. All right. Well, it should be made easier for you as well, but the major driver behind making these changes to the XML format had to do with the fact that in source control, being able to diff and merge different versions of packages was very difficult because the structure kept changing every time you hit save. And so that has now been much more streamlined. When you hit save on the same package twice, the same components are going to be in the same place, making comparison much easier. We also have new tasks and components for change data capture as well as for data quality services. I'm not going to go into that, but there are two sessions I'll be happy to refer you to at the end of my talk that will go into that, and this will be more of a foundational session from that perspective. If you're a DBA NeatDL admin, you see that your slide part right there is blank. That doesn't mean that there are no improvements in SQL 2012 for you. But in order to take advantage of those, you will need to convert your projects to the project deployment model. And fear not, I will talk about what that means and what that does and what the benefits are in much more detail during the demonstrations. But just briefly, on the developer side, there's an additional benefit. Being able to now use a project reference in an execute task, an execute package task. We no longer have to either do a SQL connection or a file connection to refer to a package. The package knows where the other packages are simply by virtue of the fact that they are in the same project. Okay? The concept or the notion of a project is now taken forward into your server. The integration services server previously did not know what a project was. It only understood individual packages. Well, that's no longer true. We can now take that concept onto the server. So for the database administrator or your ETL admin, and I'll just refer to that person as the DBA from now on, whatever you may call that person in your company, configuration management has gotten lots easier. I will demonstrate that. Logging is built in. Monitoring is built in. Things that were absent from, of course, SQL SSIS 2008 and before. Now, many of you may already have built your own logging and monitoring frameworks or gotten ideas from other people. Jessica Moss, for example, has a book on a framework. Has anyone used any such frameworks for logging, monitoring? Please show of hands. Very few of you. Okay. Well, in that case, you all came to the right session because you're prime candidates to go to the project deployment model. Okay. Now, when we talk about upgrading packages, there are two ways in which you can consider the word upgrade. One is going to happen automatically by taking your current SQL Server Integration Services 2008 packages and running them in a SQL 2012 Integration Services instance. DTExec or the other utilities that you can use to run packages will, in effect, automatically upgrade to 2012 and then execute them. But after the execution of that package is complete, the converted or the upgraded version is lost. It is not persisted. That means that the next time you run that very same package, it has to be upgraded again, and the next time again, and the next time again. So if you have a near real-time type scenario, you may be dealing with a performance impact, especially if there are script components or script tasks involved. Those are the ones that take the longest to upgrade. Okay? So sooner or later, whether or not you want to take advantage of the designer features, you're going to want to probably upgrade and save them regardless. Right? So if you want to edit packages in SQL Server Data Tools, and SSDT is short for that, you have three ways to get started. The way that I'm going to demonstrate is we are going to take some project files from Visual Studio or Business Intelligence Development Studio 2008, and we're going to open them in 2010 in a SQL Server Data Tools. And that'll upgrade our packages at the same time. We can also take an existing package and add it to an existing SQL Server Data Tools project. That'll cause the package to be upgraded as well. Or we can simply open an existing package from a file location, and that'll cause it to be upgraded with the one note that you have to then explicitly hit the save button in SQL Server Data Tools to actually make that change persist. Okay. So again, during the demo, I will take the first option. What will I demo? Well, I'm going to use real-world packages. So I work at Troy University, and we are headquartered in Troy, Alabama. But we are a global institution. We have 32,000 students ranging from sites in China, Vietnam, Malaysia, Sharjah, United Arab Emirates, 60 sites in the United States, and 4 campuses in Alabama. 8,000 of those students are in the Sorrell College of Business, for which I'm responsible for technology in that college. Why do we use SQL Server Integration Services? If you're familiar at all with higher education, you will perhaps have heard of the concept of assessment, proving that our students actually learn what they are supposed to learn. And that involves a lot of data collection from a lot of different sources. We have our student information system that keeps track of things like demographics and final grades and courses. We also have a course management system. We use Blackboard in particular. And it's okay if that name doesn't mean anything to you. That's not very relevant, but you may see that name show up later. So the course management system is where the students actually take exams and submit assignments, where the instructor assigns grades to individual projects. And so sometimes we have to go down to the question level to figure out if a certain student has learned a certain topic in the course. So we extract individual question level data from our course management system, and then there's a couple of other operational systems that we have to connect to and put that in a single data warehouse. So I'm going to use a few of these packages that I use to make that happen and upgrade them here for this demo. The real-world aspect comes in, for example, that I use package configurations. Who else uses package configurations? Yes, I, the vast majority in the room, very good. That's quite normal indeed, to make your packages just more configurable indeed. I choose to use XML configuration files. And of course, some of you may have environment variables or registry or other options. Database SQL Server data table, that's right, thank you. I also have, in some projects, the concept of child and master packages, whereby I have one package that just sequentially calls several other packages, which I do primarily to make the development a little bit easier and break down one big problem into multiple smaller ones. Okay. Also, many of my packages, connection managers and for each loops and so on, they use expressions that tie into variables and so on. Okay. So again, probably, and I see lots of nodding going on in the room, so that's a good sign. I'm not doing anything that many of you aren't doing, and that makes our packages real world, right? Some of those features. Now, something that you may not ever quite have done, maybe this. Let's take a closer look at that. By the way, that image at the bottom, that is not just a bowl of spaghetti. That is a highly proprietary custom component. This package is definitely a sign of poor development practices, and I fully realize and take responsibility for that, but sometimes it happens, right? Sometimes we don't always have the time or the resources to follow all the best practices, and we end up with these packages that look suspiciously like a bowl of spaghetti bolognese. So that's what makes my real-world packages. Let's talk about the upgrade process itself. What are the steps that we need to take to make this happen? Well, number one is we are going to upgrade the project file and the Visual Studio solution file. That is the easy step. That takes two clicks. And then we are going to execute the SQL Server Integration Services package upgrade wizard. That wizard is going to run one time for every integration services project that you have in Visual Studio. And that one wizard execution is going to attempt to upgrade all packages inside that project. So if you have two projects inside a single solution, then you will see two wizard executions taking place. And that's what we are going to see in my demos. And finally, unfortunately, we may have to fix up some connection strings. So maybe I should be more specific and say connection manager properties manually, specifically as it relates to the version of the SQL Server native client. We may have to do that manually. It will happen automatically if you have a simple connection manager. But if your connection manager connection string is stored in a config file, in a data source file, or in an expression, that will not happen automatically. The wizard cannot find that information. So we have to go in and manually change the version number of the native client. And I will show you how that impacts your upgrade process. At that point, you could theoretically stop, because as a developer, you can take advantage of the new features in SQL Server data tools. If you want to go further and take advantage of these features that we've previously classified under the project deployment model, you will then need to take the next step and execute another wizard that will convert your Visual Studio projects to the project deployment model. The project deployment model is as opposed to the package deployment model. And if you're in 2008 and 2005, you probably haven't heard about that. But whatever you're doing right now is called the package deployment model. And that is still supported. You can continue to use that if that's what you choose to do in SQL 2012. Okay? But we've talked about some of these new features on the configuration side, monitoring, logging, that require the project deployment model. So if you want to take advantage of that, you will need to do step number four. And then possibly also step number five, take connection managers and change their scope from the package level to the project level. And I will show all of these steps one at a time in the demo. So the first demo is going to do steps one, two, and three. And we're going to delve right in. So what you're looking at right now in Windows Explorer is my solution file. And I see have three folders. The first two, import Blackboard results, import Datatel info, those are Visual Studio project folders with integration services project. Then the third one is third-party components, and that's just there for purposes of keeping everything together in source control. We're not going to do anything with that today. So what I'm going to do first is take the solution file and double-click to open it. And so you'll see that we're opening this in Visual Studio 2010. SQL Server Data Tools is essentially an extension to Visual Studio 2010. So Visual Studio detects that this is a 2008 version solution file and wants to go ahead and convert it. We'll click Next to proceed and Finish. I told you literally two clicks to make that conversion happen. That's the easy part of the process. Now, because I have two integration services projects in my solution, there are two package upgrade wizards that show up. Now, you can only see one because the other one is hidden behind the first one. Okay, but they both come up because I have two projects. So let's upgrade the first project. We'll click Next. This project is a very simple one. It only has one package file. So that is the one package file that's going to get upgraded. If you protect your package files with a password, then this is the place where you would go ahead and enter that password. I don't have that done, so I'm going to just click Next. And we'll take a closer look at some of the options that we're presented with right here. So there are five checkboxes, and we'll briefly discuss each one of them and look at some best practices that you may want to understand to know if you should check them or not. So the first thing is to update the connection string to use the new provider names. Again, very specifically, that certainly applies to the SQL Server native client. Version 10.1 from 2008 R2 is now version 11 in SQL Server 2012. So the wizard is going to attempt to automatically upgrade your connection provider names. And that is a good thing, except, of course, in configuration files, in expressions, or in data sources where it doesn't look. Okay. In a typical plain connection manager, it's going to look an upgrade. That's a good thing. Generally speaking, you want to turn that on. The next checkbox allows you to immediately validate the packages when the upgrade is complete. On your development workstation, if you have access to all of the sources and the destinations and all of the other intermediate steps that should allow you to validate a package, then you probably want to go ahead and check that to have some confirmation that the upgrade went successful. On the other hand, if on your development workstation you do not have access to a particular destination or a particular source server, or maybe under the credentials that you use you don't have access to it, then you want to leave that unchecked, because otherwise your package upgrade would fail simply by the fact that it doesn't validate. That's the rule right there. Number three is to create a new package ID. In general, the recommendation is to go ahead and upgrade that, because you are dealing with a very different package after the upgrade is complete, and you really should have a new package ID because of that. The fourth one, in this particular project that I'm upgrading right now, would not make a difference either way, because it only applies if you have multiple packages in the same project to upgrade. What if one of them fails to upgrade? Are we going to continue to upgrade or attempt to upgrade the other ones, or are we going to stop the upgrade process? Okay. Again, if you only have one package, like in this particular project, it's not going to make a difference either way. And the last option is the ability to ignore configurations. I'm going to choose not to do that. I want my configurations to be taken into account during the upgrade process as well. So that means, in my case, I'm going to validate my upgraded packages because I have access to everything I need. I'm going to choose to create a new package ID, but I'm not going to ignore configurations. We move on, and it gives us a little review, and we click Finish. And you'll get this step-by-step process, and again, only one package in this project. And it completes with a warning. That is not necessarily a bad sign, but you have to go look at the messages. As a matter of fact, I would expect that many of your packages are going to end up converting with a warning for one very simple reason, and that is the warning that I have right here. You will receive a warning if your packages either contain a script task or a script component. And the warning is absolutely nothing more than telling you that there is this script component that needs to be migrated to the latest version of Visual Studio Tools for Applications. Now, the message itself may be a little bit confusing the first time you read it and see it. It says, requires migration. So the question is, do you have to do anything to make that migration happen? And the answer is no, it has already happened. Okay, as part of the upgrade process, the script was migrated to Visual Studio for Applications 3.0, the latest version. It's just giving you this warning when you are executing your package with DTExec and repetitively doing that upgrade. We talked about that very early on in the session. That warning is going to keep popping up, reminding you, hey, this is potentially a time-consuming operation that is executed every time we upgrade the package. That's why that warning is there. So I might expect that many packages would have a warning, so it's important to go ahead and examine the cause of the warning. We'll go ahead and close this wizard. So that's the first project that I've just finished upgrading. So there's project number two, wizard number two, for my second project. Now, this project does have multiple packages. I have one master package and three child packages. As you can see by the name, master is the master package, and then the other ones are sequentially executed. I did not set any passwords here either, so I'll click Next. I'm going to make the same selections for these boxes and accept a review. And if I did not make a mistake, we should actually see four success messages. A very simple reason is that by pure luck, those packages do not contain any script tasks or script components, so I did not get the warning I got the first time. And I can go ahead and close the second package upgrade wizard and close the Visual Studio conversion wizard, which will open up my solution in 2010. Okay. Now, we're almost done with the first steps. We've completed step one and step two. Now, step three, if you recall, was manually fixing up provider names if necessary. Okay. I happen to have a data source in the second project. That data source refers to a SQL Server native client connection, and it's of course in version 10.1 from 2008 R2. So when I double click on this to open it, you can actually see the old version number, SQL Server native client 10.1. That is no longer going to work. So I need to edit this connection. And I actually see a warning message about that. It says the specified provider is not supported. Please choose a different provider in Connection Manager. Okay. And you notice that the provider says native OLEDB. That's actually a folder name. That's not a provider name. Okay. Now, before you actually go there, I would encourage you to check some of the properties that you've set here. Server or file name, for example, the initial catalog, and perhaps other custom things that you may have made. For one very simple reason, the moment I go and select the correct version, SQL Server Native Client 11.0, it gets erased. So make a note of it before you click, okay? Because you have to redo it. Or cancel. Someone in the audience says, or cancel. That's correct. I could effectively cancel out of this and then have to do it again. But I don't like to repeat myself, so I like to note things up front. We'll go ahead and click OK one more time. Now, if you use data sources, and who does? Show of hands, if we may quickly. Not that many people, not that popular. Okay. Well, still, if you use data sources, for those of you who do, the packages where you have connection managers that actually refer to that data source, they also require just a little bit of work. In my case, the package that refers to the data source is the student info package. I'm going to open that package, and you will notice I get another warning message. It takes just a second to open up these packages the first time. There we go. The warning message is about the fact that now the connection string in the data source no longer matches the connection string of the connection manager that's in the package. And I have to essentially synchronize them. Now, you see, I can't cancel out of that or anything like that. I have to synchronize them. That's the whole point of a data source, right? But so that's one thing to be aware of, very specifically during execution, that warning would also come up if I executed the package without doing this first. So I'm opening it, clicking OK, and then the data source gets synchronized, the connection string gets synchronized. Now, if you had expressions, if you had configuration files, you would have to open those up and make that same change, SQL Server Native Client 10.0 or 10.1 to 11.0. Okay? I have none of that in my real-world packages here, so I don't have to go through that step. But we've essentially now finished the first part of the upgrade process, the required part of the upgrade process, if you wish. But I'm going to go ahead and show you a few things that may be of interest in terms of the new user interface. And number one is called expression adorners. There's one right here. So that is very interesting because it shows me visually that particular connection manager has an expression associated with it. I'll open up another package and I'll show you it doesn't just happen with connection managers. I happen to have in that package that I'm opening up right now, I happen to have a for each loop that has an expression set. And again, probably very common things to do, and this is a very, very small change in the user interface, but it makes it so much easier for me to understand what's going on in my packages. So I like that a lot. So there we have a few examples. And just to make sure that the upgrade process is indeed successful, I will go ahead and execute my packages and see what happens. I'll start with this one right here. Simple right-click, execute package. Same thing we would have done before as developers. You will notice another user interface change. Instead of the flashing green, yellow, red, hopefully not red, but instead of the flashing green and yellow boxes, we now have adorners on the top right corners. And they have check marks or little looping circles or, if things go bad, a red X in your package. And it looks attractive. But if you have perhaps a visual disability that's related to color blindness, sometimes that green and the green and the yellow was hard to distinguish from each other. And so now we have essentially an icon instead of a color. So that one worked, which is good. I know you may be more excited if one of them fails, but I'm going to root for myself and hope they work. So we're going to go ahead and execute these packages as well. So the master is calling the three child packages sequentially. You see them open up in the designer, and we have all green check marks. Take a look at the master to make sure. There we go. Okay. So, upgrade complete. Let's take a look at what it is that we've achieved. We've achieved converting the solution and the project. The packages were upgraded. And of course, there are lots of changes that have really taken place in the background. One of the most noticeable ones, and for those of you who indicated that they do edit the package XML by hand sometimes, the package format version has changed from 3 to 6. I know what you're thinking, where did number 4 and 5 go? I'm sorry, I do not have the answer to that question. We've also seen that some connection managers, data sources may require a manual upgrade, and we've taken care of that in my package. I didn't show it explicitly, but I do use some custom components in the packages that we upgraded, and they automatically converted. But why did that happen? Well, that happened because I thought ahead, and I made a change in the configuration file for Visual Studio 2010, the devenv.exe.config file. It's an XML file. Because it is just not worth the time on stage showing you how to do this, it's a very simple process, but it involves opening up an XML file in some obscure location, then editing some obscure settings in the XML file, I have resources that I can point you to at the end, particularly a blog post where I walk through the entire process step by step with screenshots. Like I said, it's a very easy process, it's just not worth on stage doing it. You might also have 2012 components available, in which case they will automatically upgrade to the 2012 version. At this point, I don't know of any component vendor who's actually released 2012 components. None of the ones that I'm using have released 2012 components. So you may want to take a close look at option number one. What about executing packages with custom components in DTExec? DTExec and the other tools that you can use to execute packages already have those changes to the configuration files made. So you don't have to worry about that. If you have to execute a 2008 package on a SQL Server 2012 instance with DTExec or DTUtil, whatnot, it'll just work because the configuration files have been updated by Microsoft. Microsoft has done that as part of the development process. What can we do now after we've completed that upgrade? Well, we can now take advantage of the usability improvements and the user interface improvements, and I've just highlighted a very few of them. You may have noticed the rounded corners on the components and so on. Okay, looks a little bit more modern, so we can take advantage of that now. Many of you, based on the fact that there weren't that many people in this room who've already developed their own monitoring and their own logging components, may want to take advantage of the project deployment model as well, which will require one more additional upgrade step, which we're going to talk about now. Before I show that, though, I will talk to you about the project deployment model, what it means, what it does. So the concept of a project before SQL 2012 only applied in Visual Studio, and it was nothing more than a container for multiple DTS packages, or excuse me, SSIS packages. Okay. So we're going to take that concept and move that forward to the server. One of the things that enables is that we are now going to talk about the use of package parameters instead of package configurations. I will talk a little bit more later about how that benefits you. But so instead of package configurations, if you adopt the project deployment model, you will be using package parameters, no longer package configurations. In addition, we can then take advantage of project-level connection managers. Unlike a data source, these project-level connection managers are truly shared between all the packages in your project. So if you have multiple packages that all load data in the same data warehouse, that's an excellent feature. Just in terms of configuration, saves you a lot of time reconfiguring connection managers, being able to do that. But we've also said at the very introduction slide that the advantages are found at the DBA and the ETL side. Part of that is because we can now configure an entire project at a time through the use of project parameters. So not only can we configure individual packages, package parameters, we can configure entire project with project parameters. Based on the diagram, the one on top links directly into a package parameter, but that's not necessary. I might have a project parameter that is used by multiple packages and doesn't necessarily link directly to a package parameter, but is still used by a package or by a connection manager and so on. And again, I will demonstrate some of that to make it a little less abstract. But that's the way that you're going to use configuration. You no longer can do package configuration if you choose to adopt the project deployment model. So that concept of package configuration is gone. It's called package parameters, project parameters now. So what about that DBA over there? Well, there's our database administrator. And I don't know about you, but many database administrators I've talked to, they don't particularly like editing environment variables, or they don't particularly enjoy opening up regedit to make changes there. Most of them are okay with SQL Server data tables, though they enjoy doing that. XML configuration files is also a little bit tricky, right? The big thing, though, is why is there no UI? Well, in SQL 2012, there is. So in SQL 2012, the ETL administrator or the database administrator is going to configure those integration services projects with the user interface. Okay. No more editing XML files, data tables with obscure values and whatnot. It's a user interface. But even better than just providing a user interface, we now also have a new concept called an environment. And an environment is all about creating a collection of variables. It's essentially anything the DBA decides a variable could be. It could be the name of a server, it could be the path to an Excel source file, or it could be a URL where a particular source file is located, maybe for an FTP task. Anything that the DBA decides should be used over and over and over again. So we create these variables and we place them inside an environment, and we can create multiple environments. We might have an environment for production. We might have an environment for quality assurance or for a test server. Your test server may be called SQL Test 01, and your production server may be Production 01. Previously, what did the DBA have to do? Well, very, very carefully make sure that when you added the package configuration in whatever format it was, he set the right server names for everything, right? Every environment. So now that's all bundled together, one nice little bundle. Plus, you set it up once, production, Q&A, testing, anything you like. You set it up one time, it just becomes reusable, even across different projects and across different different packages. Okay. So lots of benefits to that. So those variables can then be mapped to project parameters, to package parameters, to connection manager properties, pretty much anywhere you like. So this is the high-level overview. Let's actually take a look at how we do it, right? How we make it happen. So step number four is we are going to convert our project to the project deployment model. That's another wizard that we're going to execute. And then we are going to convert the appropriate connections to project scope instead of package scope. That's the two things we're going to do next. So I'm back in my development environment. Same packages that we just finished converting to the 2012 format, package format version 6. And we're going to start with the easiest project, the one that only contains one package. We're going to do them both, fear not, but we'll start with the simple one. I'm going to show you right here what Visual Studio tells me. Visual Studio tells me that I have a project called Import Blackboard Results, and between parentheses it says Package Deployment Model. Recall that I said the Package Deployment Model, it may be the first time that you've heard that term, but that's what you've been using today. Okay? In 2008. It didn't have that name because there was no alternative. There was only one option, was the package deployment model. Now we have two alternatives. So Visual Studio shows you what it's called, package deployment model. We're going to right-click on the project, and there's the command convert to project deployment model. So it's going to bring up a wizard, and there it is. The first step is the introduction. Talks about what's going to happen as part of this wizard. I have the packages listed that are in this project. Again, this project only has one package, that makes it easy. Once more, if I have protected that package with a password, here's my opportunity to enter that password so it will successfully convert. I didn't do that, so we move on to the next step. I want to quickly talk about these options right here. First of all, I can change the name of the project if I'm not happy with what it is right now. That's a fairly trivial thing to do. But there is the protection level. So what happens with sensitive data, things like connection string passwords and so on? I can choose to not save that as part of my package at all. Never save it. That's one option. If I do want to save it, I can encrypt it with a user key or with a password. And I can also choose to never mind the difference between sensitive data and not sensitive data. Let's just encrypt everything. And once again, either with a user key that's based on the data protection API or with a simple password. I'm going to choose the default, which is encrypt sensitive information with a user key. Now that, of course, has a potential impact on deployment, and I'm going to come back to that when we do the deployment. Now the next step is about execute package tasks. Well, I don't have any execute package tasks in this project. I'm going to skip this step. We will investigate it much more detail when we do the second project. Now I do have package configuration. I have one XML package configuration in this particular project, in that one particular package. Do I want to convert that configuration? Now the answer is almost always yes, of course, because if I don't convert it, I lose it. So I'm going to convert the package configuration to package parameters. Okay. The recommendation is that we should, after that process is complete, we should remove configurations from all packages after conversion. That is the recommendation. For some reason, though, that checkbox is not checked by default. So that is one thing to pay attention to. We click Next. And it's going to analyze that configuration file that I had. It's going to look at all the properties that I've set. And so I've set some properties, a server name or two, and a file path, and some folders. And it's asking me, well, which one of these do you want to keep? In addition, I can now also make the choice, do I want to make these configuration properties into package parameters, or do I want to maybe make one of them into a project parameter? And I will talk a little bit more about how to make that decision after we're finished with the demo. In my case, I'm going to pick one that I'm going to choose the project deployment model. The project scope. So I'm going to create one project parameter and four package parameters. Four, that's right. So we click Next. I have a choice now, or a chance now, to also edit the values that have been configured. I can just change them right now when I'm doing the conversion process, or of course you can do it anytime later as well. I have no need to change them, so I'll click Next. There's my review. And we'll complete the conversion. I'll show you that everything successfully passed, and it gives me the message that the project has indeed been successfully converted, but I do have to hit the save button for the project in Visual Studio before that will actually be persisted to disk. So I'll go ahead and close that, and I am going to hit the save button in Visual Studio. Allow me to go ahead and clean up these windows a little bit so we can focus on the one package that we've converted so far. So there's my project that's just been converted. And if you look closely here, the second project, which has not been converted yet, still says package deployment model. The other one, that string is no longer there. In addition, for those of you who have really keen eyes, you also see that the icon looks just a little bit different. It looks as if there's a folder around that icon now. So that indicates project deployment model. Project parameters, that's a brand new node. Connection managers is a brand new node. Okay, and we'll take a look at those. So project parameters, what do I have there? Well, that one property from my package configuration that I chose to map to the scope of the project level has been added there. Where have the other ones gone? Well, the other ones have become package parameters. So open up my package and I have a parameters tab right there, and there are those four remaining configuration properties that have now been converted. So that's good. That all successfully worked. Now, one of the things that I want to do, and this is at this point for demonstration purposes only, we're going to do it again for the next project where it's going to make a little bit more sense, but I'm going to take one of these connection managers and I'm going to take that connection manager and make it a project-level connection manager. The reason I'm saying that this is for demo purposes only, it's not particularly useful, I only have one package. So clearly I can't use that connection manager in another package yet, right? I'm just doing it to show you what the process looks like. In the second project, we're going to do the same thing, and there we have to take it a few steps further. So I'm going to show you first a really simple thing, and then we'll take it a few steps further. So I'm going to take this assessment management connection manager, right click, and convert to the project connection. And that is absolutely as simple as it is. The one change visually that occurs is that the word project shows up between parentheses. Now, it's important to understand that the name of your connection manager did not change. The word project between parentheses is also an adorner. It's not part of the name, but I suppose Microsoft wasn't able to find a suitable icon to make it look like it's project level, so they put the word project there. And now we have a connection manager. The node now has this connection assessment management.com manager file there. We have a project level connection manager now. Now, this project level connection manager, in my case, uses a project level parameter, the server name parameter at the project level that I chose to scope during the wizard. It's no coincidence I picked that one, right? And I knew what I was doing in advance. What if I didn't know in advance? Right? I have another parameter. I have a parameter, server name, for the assessment data warehouse connection. Okay. That's a package parameter, right? You can see that. And what happens if I take this connection manager and make it at the project level? Well, it's just as easy of a step, except that I'm getting some errors now. Why? Because that assessment data warehouse also has an expression on it, but it refers to a package parameter. That expression refers to a package parameter. Well, I think based on a hierarchy, it's kind of easy to see how a connection manager at the project level cannot successfully refer to a parameter at the package level. Okay, so I'm going to have to fix that up. So I'm going to take this, unfortunately there's no quick shortcut to convert a parameter to the project level. So I have to recreate it. I have to do it manually. So I'm going to right click so I can just copy this the same name. That makes it a little bit easier. I'm going to create a new project parameter. Just paste the name in there so you can choose the type and the value. We'll save that. We'll save that. Now the errors haven't gone away automatically. The errors haven't gone away automatically because I haven't really made a change yet. I have to go and change that expression and remove this reference to the package level parameter and instead refer to the project level parameter. There is another way to do this. There is a new dialog box called parameterize. Right click and do parameterize. We can actually do it with a graphical user interface. So I can say, take the server name property. Of course, I've just done this, right? But I can choose the parameters from here. Or I can even choose to create a new parameter directly in there. And so there's a graphical user interface to make those two separate steps that I took, creating the parameter, then assigning it, do it in one step with a graphical user interface. Okay. Now at this point, I no longer need this package level parameter, so I can delete that and clean up after myself. Okay, and now the errors have gone away because everything is fixed up. All right, so that's about connection managers at the project level. Let's go ahead and convert our second project to the project deployment model. And I get a warning. It says, watch out. The project that you're about to convert contains one or more data sources, and data sources are a concept that no longer exists in the project deployment model. Well, we now have the concept of this project level connection manager. Unfortunately, contrary to what you may expect, it's not going to take that data source and make it a project level connection manager. That would be beautiful, but it doesn't work that way. So that's why that warning is there. So we'll have to do some more steps after the project conversion. Excuse me, the deployment conversion is complete. All right. So I'm going to take all four packages. You remember I have no password set, so I click Next. Now in this particular case, we skipped that step last time about configuring execute package tasks. So in this case, I do have execute package tasks. My master package contains three execute package tasks. Now traditionally, you had two options. of telling the master package where to find its child packages. You could use a file connection and put it into a file path, or you could store it in a SQL server and create a SQL server connection string, if it were. Well, in the project deployment model, those things are still supported, but we now have actually a much better option. It's called the project reference. I don't have to fool with connection managers anymore, because a package automatically knows where another package in the same project is, because they're in the same project, right? It makes a lot of sense if you think about it, but previously it didn't work that way. Now it does. But the wizard is asking me, do you want to change these execute package tasks to use project references? And in my case, the answer is going to be yes all three times. I have configurations here too. Do I want to convert them? Yes. After converting them, I'm going to remove them. Well, what if I don't? That's a good question. So if I don't check that box, what would happen in my particular case, because I have an XML configuration file? That XML configuration file would be left behind. It wouldn't be automatically deleted. It wouldn't hurt anything. The question is, does it take precedence? And the answer is no, absolutely not. Remember, package configurations no longer exist in the project deployment model. So the fact that the XML file is there, or maybe in your case that the registry entry is there, or an environment variable is there, is absolutely meaningless, because it wouldn't be used anymore. It's just about being neat and what I call cleaning up after myself. Did I mention I'm slightly OCD? Okay, a few times. Oh, good, okay, so it's sinking in. All right. Now, I have some configuration properties that refer to the connection string for these packages. We'll see in a minute that we technically don't even need them anymore, but I'm just going to keep them anyway and convert them. We'll clean up later. I'm not going to change the values of these parameters, so I get to review the steps that are going to be taken and click convert to perform the conversion. You see the conversion results are just slightly longer because I now have converted three packages as part of this process. And click close. That reminder, by the way, was about the fact that don't forget to hit save in Visual Studio to actually save the changes you've just made, and I've just done that. Let's take a look at what happened to these connections, the execute SQL tasks. Okay? I'm going to right-click on just one of them and go to Edit. When I go to the package that is being used, you can now see that the reference type says project reference, and the package name from project reference says studentinfo.dtsx. So the package is now referenced by name, not by file location or location in the SQL server. It's simply the name of the package within the same project. Now, if for some reason that's not what you want, you can still make that what's now called an external reference, and then you have the same two options to either store that package reference SQL server or file system. You can continue to do that. The question is, what happens if you rename a package? The good news is the package reference will get fixed up automatically. That's correct. I'm just going to cancel out of this because I don't want to make that change. That has happened for all three packages. But that essentially means that these connection managers here at the bottom, those file connection managers that refer to those packages, they're useless right now. I don't need them anymore. So I'm just going to go ahead and delete them. No need for those. Okay. Parameters that have those file paths to those packages, don't need them anymore. So I'm going to delete them. And to me, this just makes a lot of sense. I come from a developer background. You know, if as a developer, you don't have to specify every single class name in every single project with a file path. It's just there because it's part of the same project. So to me, this makes perfect sense that this is the way it would have always worked. Of course, as SSIS people, we know that's not the case. Now it is. Okay? Simply by the fact that our child packages are in the same project as the master packages, we can refer to them. And remember now, that is, and we'll show that, or part of that, that is taken into deployment. That's true at deployment time as well, it's not just at design time. And that's perhaps the most important point of that. Okay. And that ends demo number two. I'll go back to the slides for a second and talk about package versus project scope for your parameters. How should you make that decision? And there's a few rules of thumb that we can use that I can share with you that'll make that decision a little bit easier. Now, you do want to make that decision ideally when you create the parameter. And I've indicated why. You can't right-click on a parameter and say, change scope to. Right? So once you create it, if it was wrong, if you created it at the package level, but it was supposed to be at the project level, you have to do it again. You have to recreate it, fix up references, and so on. It's not necessarily a fun thing to do. So the definition of a scope is essentially saying, where is that parameter going to be available? If it's a project parameter, the value of that parameter is available at any package and any connection manager in my project. However, if the package parameter scope is selected, then the package value, the parameter value, is only available in that package, which is why we saw those errors pop up when I had a connection manager at the project level that had a reference or an expression set to a package, to a parameter at the package level. That doesn't work because that value simply, that parameter simply isn't available at the project level if it's defined in a package. Okay. So what about parameters that are used to configure your connection managers? Well, in general, rule of thumb is that they should match the scope of the connection manager itself. If you've got a project level connection manager, you need to have a project level parameter. If you have a package level connection manager, you can use a project level parameter, okay, but it might make more sense to have a package level parameter to go with a package level connection manager. Okay, rule of thumb right there. What about using these parameter values to configure tasks or components? Well, that's a question that you have to answer is that particular value, is that particular parameter, is it useful across packages? If the answer is yes, make it a project level parameter. If the answer is no, that particular parameter is only useful within that one package, make it a package parameter. Okay? So there we go with that. Now we're going to deploy. We are going to take one of those two projects that we've converted to the project deployment model, and we are going to deploy them to a SQL Server 2012 instance. Now, if you do that with a project deployment model, you will deploy those packages to the SSIS catalog. The SSIS catalog is really a SQL Server database. Lots of tables, lots of columns, and that's where everything is stored. So my definition of the SSIS catalog is very simply, it's a central store for SQL Server Integration Services projects, the configuration settings, and the logs, all in one place. Okay. It comes with a user interface that provides the ability to configure, and we'll see about configuring them with an environment as well as part of the demonstration. We can also decide to turn on logging, and in addition to that, logging at different levels, minimum logging, verbose logging, basic logging, or even no logging at all, which is probably not a good idea if you ask me, but it's an option. Monitoring, while the package is executing, what's going on right then and there? It's built in now. And finally, also security, who has the ability to execute a package? Who has the ability to change parameters, to change values in the environments, and so on? All built into the SSIS catalog. All right. So we're going to go ahead and take a look at this deployment. Now, what I have set up is a separate server to show you that this actually works, not just on my development machine, but it actually works when I put it on a different machine as well. Now, I've made this a Windows Server 8 beta installation, an operating system SQL Server 2012 RTM. You don't need Windows Server 8 or Windows Server 2012. I just did that because I could. Okay. So I've opened up SQL Server Management Studio here, and I have already pre-created the SSISDB, the Integration Services Catalog. I've pre-created a very simple... Excuse me about that. Thank you for reminding me that I have to switch my screen. Okay, so what you see is SQL Server Management Studio on my server that I'm going to deploy my project to. I've already pre-created the Integration Services Catalog. It's a very simple process, so I just did it in advance. So let's take a look at what happens when we deploy. So I deploy from the client, of course. Let me close some windows first, make sure everything is cleaned up. So I right-click on the project, and choose deploy. And it's going to bring up another wizard, yet another wizard. A little introduction. We click next. Now notice what happens here very quickly. We essentially skipped a step almost, right? I went from introduction directly to select destination. So what's the source? Well, because I right-clicked on a project, that's my source. That project is my source. Okay? So that's why that step was skipped. That wizard can be executed standalone as well, which is why that step is there. If I execute a wizard outside of Visual Studio to deploy, then that source would make sense. So my destination, the name of my server is SQL2012-01. I type that in. I could browse for it too if I chose to. And now I have to define a path. Now, a path here does not refer to a file system path, not C:\something. Okay? It's a path in my catalog, in the integration services catalog. Now, I have to create a folder. I cannot just go and take a project and deploy it in the root of the catalog. That does not work. That would create a mess. So I have to create a new folder first. And I'm just going to call mine Data Warehouse because then I only have two chances to type it wrong. Okay. I can create multiple folders but not subfolders. So I created the Data Warehouse folder. Okay. I cannot create yet another subfolder. Only one level of folders is possible. So that's where I'm going to deploy it to. I'm going to click OK. And so you see that the path essentially becomes SSISDB, which is the root, DW, the folder I created, and then the name of my project. That's a great question. Is the catalog at the server level or at the instance level? The answer is it is at the instance level. So we have multiple SQL Server instances on a single server, on a single piece of hardware. Then, of course, I will have to specify the instance name right there in my server name. Good question. Thank you for that. Click Next, get a little review, and I'm going to go ahead and deploy. And we're going to take a look when the deployment is finished at some of these steps that have taken place. The first thing that happens is I load the project. That's okay. Second step, connect to the destination server. That's okay too. Third step is changing the protection level. Let's think back to when we converted our packages and to the project deployment model, and we chose to save, to encrypt sensitive data with the user key. Well, my user account here in my development workstation is not the user account that is going to be executing the packages on the server. So if I use a user key to encrypt sensitive data, the package execution would fail. So this deployment part takes that into account and it essentially decrypts these sensitive values. And don't fear, it is not going to store them in plain text on the server. It's going to use server storage and the server storage keys to protect them. But it's taking care of the decryption step and re-encrypting it for me as part of the deployment process, all integrated. Now, one other thing I would like to mention is that this source it refers to, I'm going to go back into the deployment wizard, the source it refers to is essentially a single file. Right there, with the extension ISPAC. Anyone here who's familiar with data tier applications and DAC packs? Just a few people? Well, essentially, very similar concept. A data tier application or a DAC pack is just this one little file that contains everything you need to deploy your database. This ISPAC is one single file that contains everything I need to know to deploy an integration services project. All the packages in the project in that one file, all the sensitive information, all the connection managers at the project level, all the project parameters, all in one file, single file to deploy. So this is often called an ice pack, and an ice pack, therefore, is very similar to a DAC pack. It's only cooler. All right. So I'm going to not execute this wizard again, but I'm going to switch back to my server instance, and let's take a look at what happened. And let's take a look at how we can figure out this configuration thing. I'm going to refresh my SSISDB. There's my folder. I created that, Data Warehouse, DW. Project node, environment node is empty. My project node has project import Blackboard results, and that particular project, as we know by now, only has one package, and therefore that's the package that is listed. Now, what can I do to change some of these values? Well, I can right-click and configure. And that allows me to look at the package level and the project level parameters, and it has them all listed there with their name and with their value, and I can change these now. So instead of maybe referring to the local instance, I might change that. In a reality, this is really the same database instance, but just to show you what it looks like, if I've modified it from the default value, it shows up in bold. That's a very easy way to see that that's a modified value. I can also do something different that I find very useful, and that is first go and create one of those environments. Okay, so the environment is a collection of variables, and I can then use those variables to assign to those parameters and the connection manager properties. So an environment just has a name. I'll call mine production. Right-click and go to the properties of the environment, and that's where I have the opportunity to create variables. Okay? So what I'm going to say is I'm going to create a variable for my Excel files to indicate where they are stored. Excel source path. I can call this anything I want to, by the way. It does not have to have the same name as the parameter I'm trying to configure. Could be anything. Could be very descriptive. That is going to be a string data type. I could even type in a much more descriptive value if I choose. And on my server, these are found in the data import folder, results by question. If that is a sensitive value, as in a password or something else that shouldn't be publicly known, I can check that box, which will immediately encrypt that value. So I'll go ahead and click OK on that. So I've created this environment, and I can now go and configure that project, not just, and I didn't click OK on that, so I'll do this one here, just the way I did it before, by typing in a value directly and making it show up bold. But I'm going to configure my source folder. That's where my Excel files are supposed to be. Now, this path right here does not exist on the server. That was only on my development machine, so I need to change that around. But before I can use an environment, I have to add a reference to that environment. Okay, here's a reference tab. So I can actually reference more than one environment at the same time, if that's something that might be useful. So I'm going to reference my production environment. Go back to parameters, and now what I can do is check this box, use environment variable. Of course, I've made it easier myself. I've only created one, but there's my list of variables, and I can say use the value of the Excel source path variable in that production environment as the value for that parameter that we're configuring right now. And you see that what happens is instead of actually seeing the value, it shows me the name of the variable with an underline. That's your indication that this is configured from an environment, and that's the name of a variable, not the value. Why doesn't it not show me the value? Because I could create multiple environments, production, Q&A, testing, something else. I could have all the same variable names with all different values. And when I execute a package at runtime is when I decide which of these environments to pick. Okay? Let's take a look at how that works. So we'll click OK. So the configuration is done, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up this folder right here that I refer to. And you see there's two Excel files in there. So now I can execute a package, and of course I can still schedule it with the SQL agent and so on. All those features are still available. And I can execute it with the GUI. Okay, and I get this same almost the same screen. So the parameters, the values that I've set are already there, except that there's an exclamation mark next to the source folder. And the message is telling me that the parameter source folder, it just disappeared on me, that the parameter source folder is configured to use an environment variable, but I have not yet selected an environment for this execution run. Oh. So I'll choose to select an environment. Check this box. If I had more than one environment, this is where they would be listed. Okay, I only have one, which is production. Now it says, tells me that this is the Excel source path variable. Okay. So at execution time, I can only select one environment, but pre-configured, I can select as many as I need to to make these variables work. By the way, I've only shown you so far that I can configure parameters, but I can actually also configure all the connection managers. All the connection managers in there, all their properties are configurable without turning them specifically into parameters. Okay? So if you don't even need to create parameters, in other words, if all that you're going to configure is connection managers. You don't even have to worry about that. Okay? That's automatically available in the UI. On the advanced tab is where I can select the logging level for the execution. I can choose to not log anything at all, do a basic level of logging, a performance analysis type logging. It'll give me more input on how long each thing took, or a verbose level of logging, which is essentially the maximum level, will spit out a whole bunch of information. Now, for our purposes, basic is more than sufficient. And we'll go ahead and click OK, and that's immediately going to start executing that particular package. And it tells me that I have this operation that has been assigned ID number 37. It has started. If I want to see information about the execution and about the validation, I can open up the dashboard. Now, the simple fact that it took me this long to tell you that means that the package execution has actually already completed. Okay. I can also do an all operations report from the SSISDB node. Would I like to open an overview report now? Well, yes, I would. Now, we're going to have to twist our thumbs for just a little while, because running that report on my development, well, not development, on my demo environment, wow, the demo gods are with me. I've tried this 5 times today in preparation of this session, and it always took a long time. Oh, but it failed, so the demo gods are not with me. Oh, I spoke too soon. Yes, I know why it failed. But that's okay, because that can be part of the demo. So it's telling me that it failed. Now, of course, the question is, why did it fail? So let's take a look at the messages that were generated that will tell me why it failed. Now, I know why it failed, because I forgot to make it. Just a little minor, tiny change in that package to make it work on the server. And we'll go back and we'll fix it. As a matter of fact, I wanted to do that anyway, to show you that when you go and make a change to a package and redeploy it, all that stuff about these environments and these values we configured, that doesn't disappear. So you can redeploy a package as often as you like, and you do not have to worry about your environments or your custom configurations disappearing on you. Okay? So I was going to do it anyway, but I know what's wrong here. One of my components failed validation because it has... it doesn't have delayed validation, and it refers to some folder that doesn't exist on this server. But again, fear not, we are going to fix that. So I'm going to go back to my development workstation. I'm going to open this package, and the fix in this particular case is as simple as delaying validation on that hard-coded component. Oops. It's alphabetical, right? I never said I could say the alphabet from start to finish. So we're going to go ahead and save that. So I turned on delay validation on that package that was causing the problem. Excuse me, on the component that was causing the problem. I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to deploy again. It's going to bring up the exact same wizard, and it's remembered the values from last time for my destination. Right? Now, I do have a little warning there. The only thing that warning says is that, hey, you've already deployed that project to that server. If you continue, you're going to essentially deploy a new version. All right, that works. Next and deploy. That all passed. I'm going to jinx myself if I say the word fail one more time. Oops, I just did. Okay, so close that old message. Let me show you first, when I go to configure, that all this stuff has been maintained. That custom value is still there, and that variable is still there. Okay, so that's the configure one. I don't need to reconfigure that. I'm going to execute. Don't forget to select an environment and click OK. Once again, the operation has started. Would like to open the overview report right now. I'm going to go ahead and select yes. I'm going to take a little peek and see if it worked. Hey, I can already tell it worked because it renamed my Excel files with the BAK extension. So hopefully this time we will be successful and we will actually see a success message. Now, one other thing I want to go ahead and point out here is this one thing right here. Now, I know that never happens in your environment, but I've got some colleagues, and sometimes they don't do the smartest things when it comes to developing SSIS packages. So they think they've made the school change to the SSRS package, they've deployed it to the server, and what have you, it fails. Right? Now all of a sudden there's panic because where is the working version of the package? Well, the answer in my case, it's in source control. But now the answer is even better, it's in the SSRS catalog. The SSRS catalog automatically keeps track of the versions of the packages. Okay, so if I have a dim-witted developer, and again, I know in your environment none of those are, okay, but if I have a developer who makes a big mistake and goes and deploys a package without testing it sufficiently and breaks my integration process, I can just go back to the old version by restoring it. Now that's beautiful to me. And guess what? My package execution now succeeded. That is the end of demo number 3. We've deployed to the SSRS catalog, we've looked at the execution, we've had a failure, we've looked at the report, figured out what the failure, why the failure happened, fixed it, redeployed it, ran it again, and were able to keep track of the different versions and so on as part of the catalog. Okay, I think that's powerful. So to wrapping it up, the complexity of this upgrade that we've performed is definitely going to vary on your individual experience on your individual packages. So the complexity is going to increase if you use third-party components, possibly, if you use package configurations, and that's what I've done. You say it wasn't all that complex, but sometimes I had to take that into account, okay, by doing configuration values and whatnot, parameters. If you have scripts, script tests or script components that call custom assemblies, I didn't demonstrate that, but that might also introduce a little additional complexity. If you would like to find out some more resources that I've collected while researching this talk, I have a link up there. It's a bit of a long link, but don't worry, I have a shorter link to my blog coming up on a future slide. I will briefly show you some of the related content that we have. There is a product demo station in the Technical Learning Center, station DBI 6. So that's in the database and business intelligence area. You will find me there several times. And the one that's relevant to SQL Server Integration Services is station number 6, like I said, called Credible Consistent Data. There is a certification exam about implementing a data warehouse using SQL Server 2012. There's an exam cram for that exam, exam 70-463, available right here at TechEd. You can find me later, and I really, truly would enjoy speaking to you about your experiences with SSIS and maybe your concerns about upgrading to 2012 and so on. So you can find me at the Technical Learning Center. I will be there most of tomorrow. I will also be there Wednesday and Thursday. We also have community night tomorrow evening starting at 6:15 at the Technical Learning Center on the Partner Expo. We'll have discussion tables for every topic, including credible, consistent data, of which SSIS is part, and I will be there to talk to you then as well. We have two other breakout sessions that are related. We have DBI 310, which is about to start at 4:45 on the next floor up. The title of that is Enterprise Information Management, IEM, bringing together SSIS, DQS, and MDS, Master Data Services and Data Quality Services. And that will be a talk by Matt Masson, and he's with Microsoft, so he's going to tell you a whole lot about that. We also have DBI 322 tomorrow morning, and that is talking about the new change data capture components that are available in SQL 2012. And then one more thing, a hands-on lab. There is a hands-on lab available for exploring SQL Server Integration Services. So for those of you who want to see more about the shiny new user interface and the shiny new designer, that's where you might want to head out to. Finally, track resources. There is SQL Server 2012 evaluation copy available. I've pointed you to a hands-on lab to certification training. On Twitter, you can follow at SQL Server to learn about product updates. We also have some general resources for TechEd. I'm going to skip to that because it's now up to me to tell you thank you for your attendance, for your participation, raising your hands and asking questions. I very much appreciate it. One more thing I would love for you to do is to fill out an evaluation and have a chance to win an Xbox with a Kinect or possibly other valuable items. And here is the tag that you can scan with your phone that will take you directly to the evaluation page. I'd love to take questions at this point. And remember, if you don't get to ask your question right here, Technical Learning Center is where I'll be in the future. Go ahead. In the in the project deployment model, yes, it does. Yes. If you do not convert your project to project deployment model, you stay with the package deployment model, and the concept of the DTSX in the file system or in the SQL Server remains the same. That's correct. Thank you for asking that question. Go ahead. In the project deployment model, indeed, you have to deploy the entire project. Okay. So the project deployment model does not allow you to deploy individual packages anymore. Yes? How do you deploy if you do not have access to the production server? That's another very good question. If you build the project, previously, the only thing that would happen is that your DTSX packages were just copied to an output folder. Right now, what's going to happen is that ISPAC file is going to generate it. You can email that or somehow hand that off to your DBA, and then the DBA can execute the deployment wizard and make the selections that we've made. The DBA admin to start the deployment process from an ISPAC file is going to double-click that ISPAC file, and it'll bring up the wizard. That's what's happening. Great questions. Thank you so much for having these questions. Yes?
If you automate running packages with the SQL Server agent, can you on untucked time say which environment
to use? You absolutely can. The question is, if I run my packages with a SQL agent, can I choose what environment to use? And so, yes, one of the parameters that you can pass into that job definition is the environment to use. You will not specify the environment by name. Each environment has a unique ID number, not a GUID, thank God, just a number, an integer number, and that's what you will specify in the SQL Server agent.
All right.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You can still have agent jobs, and I suspect that what most of us will end up doing, of course, is scheduling that with a job. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Can you specify
yes?
Package parameters in the job step?
Can you specify package parameter values in the job step? You absolutely can. Yeah, you certainly can. Absolutely possible. Although, in my opinion, it's much easier to create an environment and just do it in advance. But say you have to have this one-off type thing, you have to just override one, you absolutely can. Okay, well, thank you once again. I'm going to make room for the next presenter, and I look forward to seeing you maybe tomorrow night, maybe in the Technical Learning Center for some further interaction. Thank you very much.